On Friday, the 18th of May, after having seen no land for 23 days, we sighted lofty mountains. We approached the land, but owing to the heavy rain and a thunderstorm which prevailed while we were sailing along the coast, our pilot was unable to identify the exact locality. On Sunday, we found ourselves close to some mountains, and when we were near enough for the pilot to recognize them, he told us that they were above Calcut, and that this was the country we desired to go to. We anchored about a league and a half from the shore. After we were at anchor, four boats approached us from the land, who asked us what nation we were, and they then pointed out Calcut to us. On the following day, these same boats came again alongside, when the Captain Major sent one of the convicts to Calcut. The first greeting that he received was in these words, "May the devil take thee, what brought you hither?" They asked what he sought so far away from home, and he told them that we came in search of Christians and spices. We were greatly astonished to hear the people talk, for we never expected to hear our language spoken so far away from Portugal. The city of Calcut is inhabited by Christians. They are of a tawny complexion. Some of them have big beards and long hair, whilst others clip their hair short or shave the head, merely allowing a tuft to remain on the crown as a sign that they are Christians. They also wear moustaches. They pierce the ears and wear much gold in them. They go naked down to the waist, covering their lower extremities with very fine cotton stuffs. But it is only the most respectable who do this, for the others manage as best they are able. The women of this country, as a rule, are ugly and of small stature. They wear many jewels of gold round the neck, numerous bracelets on their arms, and rings set with precious stones on their toes. All these people are well disposed, and apparently of a mild temper, though at first sight they seem covetous and ignorant. When we arrived at Calcut, the king was 15 leagues away. The captain major sent two men to him with a message, informing him that an ambassador had arrived from the king of Portugal with letters, and that if he desired, he would take them to where the king was. The king presented the bearers of this message with much fine cloth. He sent word to the captain bidding him welcome, saying that he was about to proceed to Calcut. As a matter of fact, he started at once with a large retinue. On the following morning, the captain major set out to speak to the king, and took with him 13 men, of whom I was one. We put on our best attire, placed bombards in our boats, and took with us trumpets and many flags. On landing, the captain major was received by many men, armed and unarmed. The reception was friendly, as if the people were pleased to see us, though at first appearance looked threatening, for they carried naked swords in their hands. A palanquin was provided for the captain major, such as is used by men of distinction in that country, as also by some of the merchants who pay something to the king for the privilege. Attended by all these people, we took the road of Calcut and came first to another town called Capua. The captain major was there deposited at the house of a man of rank, while we others were provided with food, consisting of rice with much butter and excellent boiled fish. When we arrived at Calcut, they took us to a large church, and this is what we saw. The body of the church is as large as a monastery, all built with hewn stone and covered with tiles. At the main entrance rises a pillar of bronze as high as a mast, on the top of which was perched a bird, apparently a cock. In addition to this, there was another pillar as high as a man, and very stout. In the centre of the body of a church rose a chapel, all built of hewn stone, with a bronze door sufficiently wide for a man to pass, and stone steps leading up to it. Within this sanctuary stood a small image, on which they said represented Our Lady. Along the walls, by the main entrance, hung seven small bells. In this church, the captain major said his prayers, and we with him. We did not go within the chapel, for it is the custom that only certain servants of the church called coiffees should enter. These coiffees wore some threads passing over the left shoulder and under the right arm, in the same manner as our deacons wear the stole. They threw holy water over us and gave us some white earth, which the Christians of this country are in the habit of putting on their foreheads, breasts around their neck, and on the forearms. They threw holy water upon the captain major and gave him some of the earth, which he gave in charge of someone, giving them to understand that he would put it on later. Many other saints were painted on the walls of the church wearing crowns. They were painted variously, with teeth protruding an inch from the mouth and four or five arms. The king was in a small court, reclining upon a couch covered with a cloth of green velvet, above which was a good mattress, and upon this again a sheet of cotton stuff, very white and fine, more so than any linen. The cushions were after the same fashion. In his left hand the king held a very large golden cup, having a capacity of half an almude. At its mouth this cup was two palmers wide. Into this cup the king threw the husks of a certain herb, which is chewed by the people of this country because of its soothing effects, and which they call a tambour. On the right side of the king stood a basin of gold, so large that a man might just encircle it with his arms. This contained the herbs. There were likewise many silver jugs. The canopy above the couch was all gilt. The captain, on entering, saluted in the manner of the country by putting the hands together, then raising them towards heaven, as is done by Christians when addressing God, and immediately afterwards opening them and shutting the fists quickly. The king beckoned to the captain with his right hand to come nearer, but the captain did not approach him, for it is the custom of the country for no man to approach the king, except only the servant who hands him the herbs. When the king beckoned to the captain, he looked at us others, and ordered us to be seated on a stone bench near him, where he could see us. He ordered that water for our hands should be given us, as also some fruit, one kind of which resembled a melon, except that its outside was rough and the inside sweet, whilst another kind of fruit resembled a fig, and tasted very nice. And the captain told him he was the ambassador of a king of Portugal, who was lord of many countries and the possessor of great wealth of every description, exceeding that of any king of these parts. That, for a period of 60 years, his ancestors had annually sent out vessels to make discoveries in the direction of India, as they knew there were Christian kings there like themselves. This, he said, was the reason which induced them to order the country to be discovered, not because they sought for gold or silver, for of this they had such abundance that they needed not what was to be found in this country. There reigned a king whose name was Dom Manuel, who had ordered him to build three vessels, of which he had been appointed captain major, and who had ordered him not to return to Portugal until he should have discovered the king of the Christians, on pain of having his head cut off. And finally, he had been instructed to say by word of mouth that he, the king of Portugal, desired to be his friend and brother. On Tuesday, the captain got ready the following things to be sent to the king: 12 pieces of lamble, 174 scarlet hoods, 6 hats, 4 strings of coral, a case containing 6 washhand basins, a case of sugar, 2 casks of oil, and 2 of honey. And as it is the custom not to send anything to the king without the knowledge of the Moor, his factor, and of the bail, the captain informed them of his intention. They came, and when they saw the present, they laughed at it, saying it was not a thing to offer a king, that the poorest merchant from Mecca or any other part of India gave more, and that if you wanted to make a present it should be in gold, as the king would not accept such things. When the captain heard this, he grew sad, and said that he had brought no gold, that, moreover, he was no merchant, but an ambassador, that he gave of that which he had, which was his own private gift and not the king's, that if the king of Portugal ordered him to return, he would entrust him with far richer presents, and that if King Camelim would not accept these things, he would send them back to the ships. Upon this, they declared that they would not forward his presents, nor consent to his forwarding them himself. When the captain saw that they were determined not to forward his present, he said that as they would not allow him to send his present to the palace, he would go to speak to the king, and would then return to the ships. When he had entered, the king said that he had expected him on Tuesday. The captain said that the long road had tired him, and that for this reason he had not come to see him. The king then said that he had told him that he came from a very rich kingdom, and yet he had brought him nothing. To this the captain rejoined that he had brought nothing because the object of his voyage was merely to make discoveries. The king then asked what it was he had come to discover, stones or men. If he had come to discover men, as he said, why had he brought nothing? Moreover, he had been told that he carried with him the golden image of a Santa Maria. The captain said that the Santa Maria was not of gold, and that even if she were, he would not part with her, as she had guided him across the ocean and would guide him back to his own country. The king then asked what kind of merchandise was to be found in his country, The captain said there was much corn, cloth, iron, bronze, and many other things. The king asked whether he had any merchandise with him. The captain replied that he had a little of each sort as samples, and that if permitted to return to the ships, he would order it to be landed. The king said no. He might take all his people with him, securely moor his ships, land his merchandise, and sell it to the best advantage. Having taken leave of the king, the captain returned to his lodgings, and we with him. As it was already late, no attempt was made to depart that night. In this manner, all on board ship went on land in twos and threes, taking with them bracelets, cloths, new shirts, and other articles, which they desired to sell. We did not, however, effect these sales at the prices hoped for when we arrived in Mozambique, for a very fine shirt, which in Portugal fetches 300 reis, was here worth only 2 fanos, which is equivalent only to 30 reis, for 30 reis in this country is a big sum. And just as we sold shirts cheaply, so we sold other things in order to take some things away from this country, if only for samples. On Wednesday, the 29th of August, the Captain Major and the other captains agreed that, inasmuch as we had discovered the country that we had come in search of, as also spices and precious stones, and it appeared impossible to establish cordial relations with the people, it would be as well to take our departure. And it was resolved that we should take with us the men whom we detained, as, on our return to Calcutta, they might be useful to us in establishing friendly relations. We therefore set sail and left for Portugal, greatly rejoicing at our good fortune in having made so great a discovery.